A Sunday night slugfest between the Texans and Cowboys, a Blake Bortles meltdown as the Chiefs take control of the AFC, the Vikings get back on track, and how the Bills found a way again. We're breaking down all things Week 5 on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We are through a Week 5 Sunday that felt a little bit like order was restored to an extent. Steelers won a game. I don't know. Panthers won. Vikings won again. It seems
AFC
like
South kind of got to 500 across the board. Texans came up. Titans came down. Everybody. Yeah, I agree with you. It did feel like the NFL season is settling in. And then we ended with that defensive fist fight in Texas. And that felt a little more like NFL football, given all the scoring and over-the-top offense we've seen this season.
That felt like almost outdated NFL football at this point, whether you like it or not. But let's start there with the Sunday nighter. The Texans outlast the Cowboys in overtime, 19-16 win. I'll just say, I thought the Texans were clearly the better team in this game, and I feel like this game was almost a microcosm of their season, just bad situational football, bad play in the red zone and goal to go situations. And that's kind of, you know, we've talked on the show a couple times, you know, how are the Texans struggling so badly? Why are they losing games when the offense is clicking pretty well? The defense, you know, they have some issues in the secondary, but it's still a good defense. Why are they, you know, they were one in four coming into this one. Why was that the case? And I think you got a taste of that. Excuse me, they were 1-3 coming into this one. I was chalking up as a loss with all the bad karma in this one. But they're 2-3 now. But this has kind of been their issue this year. It really is just bad situational football.
Well, the one thing I still don't understand, we're not seeing as many misdirection, play action, moving pockets. The stuff that they did so impressively on the fly last year with Watson, for whatever reason, they're not doing it this year. They're doing it about a third as much if we're to track the numbers on it. They're very protection-oriented, a lot of extra bodies back in pass protection, which is interesting because Bill O'Brien, he comes from the Patriots system, and in his heart of hearts, I know for certain he wants to get all five eligible receivers out in a route. So it's not like it's a philosophical issue here. They clearly don't trust their offensive tackles, and they've been making personnel changes there, and it looks like Kendall Lamb on the right side is becoming the solution, at least compared to what they had as their other options. Davenport's back at left tackle, but they don't fully trust those guys. But they didn't trust their tackles last year, and they still were able to accommodate the offense for Watson. I don't get the sense they're doing that as much, but I will say, Gary, in this game, and it doesn't feel like it because it was such a defensive battle and there were some goal line stands by Dallas, but I thought Watson played a lot more in rhythm and on schedule in this game compared to previous weeks.
No, I agree. And you know, we talked about it on the Deep Dive show a little bit. I think they're trying to be more conservative with Watson, but realizing that it doesn't matter. I mean, you saw the shots he took tonight. I think only one of those was actually a designed run. But he's getting hammered out there.
Yeah. No, I had someone from the Redskins staff. They were on the 2012 Redskins staff. He said to me recently, you know, everybody thinks that Robert Griffin and the read options are what did him in. It was never the read options. It was when he scrambled, and that's when running QBs really take their big hits. They're in a different mindset here. It's a different type of running, and they're less apt to protect themselves, and that's something Watson's going to have to figure out. That's what separates Russell Wilson from a lot of guys. Russell Wilson stayed healthy throughout his career because he hasn't taken big hits. I understand what Watson was doing tonight. I understand a few of the goal line plays, and sometimes that's the nature of football and the nature of this game. But it's a fine line to walk, and he needs to walk it a little finer still. He can't get it hit as often as he did tonight. Not the way he got hit.
There was clearly something wrong with his ribs. We'll find out as the week goes on. But they have Buffalo coming in next week. I do want to talk about a couple of key decisions in this game. The first one was, and I hated this. I'll give you the two-layered reason why I hated this. The fourth and goal from the, let's call it like the 4-inch line in at the end of the first half that the Texans had. They were up 10-6 at the time. DeAndre Hopkins on third and goal had been had come up just short of the goal line. They went for it, which is fine, but they came out and shotgun. If you are going to go shotgun on fourth and goal from the 6-inch line, you're basically making that into like a 2-point conversion type of distance. You're taking away the advantage of being on the 6-inch line for the most part. So at that point, if you're going to come out and shotgun, just take the points. I mean, you're basically turning a 90% play into like a 60% play. If you take the points, now you're making the Cowboys, who really couldn't do anything offensively tonight for the most part, save for a couple of Dak Prescott superhuman plays. Now, I mean, you're going in with a touchdown lead on the Cowboys and getting the ball to start the second half. I mean, that's a pretty dominating position at that point.
I agree. Then if you go see the advantage of going under center on a run, because let's say they take away the QB sneak, which they probably would. They did on one of the other goal line stands. Woods, Antoine Woods made a nice play there. And Tyron Crawford did. They got in the A gaps. But if when you hand the ball off under center, the running back receives the ball as he's going downhill. He's got downhill momentum. And shotgun, you lose that element because the running back's next to the QB. So it's I agree with you. It's a totally different type of run. And obviously, a lot of your shotgun designs are passes anyway, and we can debate whether that's the right move. The other thing is I don't love the idea of gambling at the end of the half. I mean, when it works, it's wonderful, and you go into halftime, and I'm sure you're banging the lockers and everything. And I understand there's a human side to this. Tactically, schematically, it's not a great decision because one of the benefits of going for it on fourth down and goal line, let's say you lose and you turn the ball over on downs, you still get a huge field position swing because they're backed up. And so you get maybe a safety or you get the punt back in field goal position almost. Well, that goes out the window if it's at the end of the half. So trick plays and gambles and fourth down gambles at the end of the half, they're not as valuable. And NBC did that graphic. Do you, you know, X percent amount of chance of winning if you get it, this percent if you don't, this percent. And it sounded like it was the right decision, but I bet you anything, that graphic and the math behind it didn't factor in the fact that Houston was getting the ball next to open the half and that there'd be no field position swing. Those are not equal fourth downs. A fourth and goal at the end of the half is very different than a fourth and goal at any other point in the game.
That's a very good point. The other fourth down decision, of course, came in overtime. Jason Garrett opting to punt the ball from the Texans 42 on the first possession of overtime. He's getting a decent amount of heat from it in the social media world, which is always oh so important because it apparently it's what, I don't know, frames everyone's reference in media these days. But what did you think of the decision, Andy?
Yeah, I didn't love that decision either. It was the down and down? It was 1 yard to go, wasn't it? It's fourth and one at the 42.
It seemed to be a long one.
A long one. I didn't love the decision. I didn't love the decision. They'd had so much success with Tavon Austin, misdirection stuff. They'd been thrown to their tight ends a little bit. They still have Ezekiel Elliott and the power run game. If you fail on that, it's a defensive battle. I would still trust my defense to hold them. Houston would have had to go 35 yards or so to get into field goal range. I'm trusting my defense in that scenario. I would have gone for it.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I was turning this one over my head and I was thinking, well, if they really think Deshaun Watson is completely banged up and isn't going to be able to do anything, maybe they're thinking they'll get the three and out and get the ball back around midfield and you know, you're mitigating the risk from that point. But still, you know, it's not like the Cowboys were you know, ramming the ball down anyone's throat tonight anyway. So I thought they were in pretty good scoring position. And if they get the first down there, they're probably going to, you know, they're going to have a solid chance at a long field goal at the very least. And then you sort of take your chances, you know, if you think you're going to be able to hold the Texans and a hampered Deshaun Watson anyway, you take your chances with that. And then you get your stop after the kickoff. But
and then the other thing, and I know we got to get going to our next game here, but the other decision, and it got overlooked totally in the flow of the game, was Dak Prescott on third down and long. It was third and 17, just after the two-minute warning. He scrambled for 7 yards and stepped out of bounds, and that was really bad clock management, because Houston had one timeout at that point. It's now 1:49 left in the game when Dallas is punting. They could have run that down to 1:09 left or forced the Texans to use their last timeout. And then Houston's not driving in regulation. At the end of regulation, it didn't matter because of the Xavier Woods interception, but it was a young QB play by Prescott. He should know better by now.
Yeah, there was a lot of bad situational football in this game, but it was entertaining, and it was fun to see. I don't know, not nonstop touchdowns for a while, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's go on to the team that has sort of fueled the touchdown crave here. That is the Chiefs. They beat the Jaguars handily in Kansas City today, 30-14. This was more the defense, and this is going to sound a little bit ridiculous, because this game felt a little like week one when they beat the Chargers, and then the Chargers rolled up all these sort of garbage time yards on them. Jacksonville did end up with 502 yards, but ultimately, I mean, Blake Bortles had four interceptions or five turnovers in this game by the Jaguars. Bortles was uncomfortable all day. I have to say, I know they're talented in that Chiefs pass rush, and I know they're not very good in the back end, especially when it comes to, tackling and whatnot. I thought the pass rush was excellent today. I thought Bortles was completely uncomfortable throughout the game. He seemed to have trouble literally just gripping the ball when he was throwing through the rain, and they really sort of sparked this Blake Bortles meltdown type of performance.
Well, a story that has gone totally unnoticed is a few weeks ago, the Jaguars lost their left tackle. Cam Robinson went down for the season, and I thought he was one of the really good up-and-coming pass-blocking tackles in football. Well, when you're very much a schemed offense and you run a lot of running concepts, so by that we also mean your passing game comes out of your running game, offensive line means something. It matters. And you're not like a spread out quick strike offense where the ball's going to be out and before anyone can get beat. So having, and Josh Wells, to his credits, played pretty well in there, especially for an undrafted guy. He's about a fifth year veteran, I believe. But, you know, when they face talented pass rushers, a D Ford, a Justin Houston type, that might come home to roost.
Yeah, it was, ultimately Bortles. This was a classic bad Bortles game. If you have him in fantasy, you're thrilled because he threw for 430 yards in this one because he dropped back 70 times or so. But, he turned it over five times, and they were out of it before they could get back in it. Patrick Mahomes didn't throw a touchdown pass in this game. That should be a headline in and of itself, and was intercepted twice, so he is on the board as far as interceptions go. The Chiefs won a game. They've won games in sort of different fashions each of the last 2 weeks. In Monday night in Denver, they had to come from behind. In this one, it was really the defense that that helped set the tone. Not that the offense was problematic, but Chiefs are good, I guess is my point.
Yeah, and this is a big win for them as a team moving forward, because that defense, call it a morale factor. I mean, these are professionals, so let's not overblow that. But I'm sure it feels good for the collective organization that they won this type of game on the strength of the defense for a change.
Yeah. Before we move on here, as we covered a little bit earlier, lining up in shotgun on fourth and goal from the 6-inch line at the end of the first half, not so smart. Also, these job sites that send you tons of the wrong resumes to sort through, that's not smart. But you know what is smart? Going to ZipRecruiter.com/things to hire the right person. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply so you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. This rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/things. That's ZipRecruiter.com/THINGS. ZipRecruiter.com/things. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, Andy. Minnesota Vikings back in the win column. This one was not beautiful. Couple of big time throws by Kirk Cousins. I think it was the Vikings receivers versus the Eagles cornerbacks was the mismatch you would have expected it to be. But defense kind of held on in this one. They got a long fumble return TD from Linval Joseph. They got they forced a Jay Ajayi fumble and deep in their own territory late, and they hang on for a 23-21 win in this one. And I mean, gosh, they needed this one.
Yeah, they did need this one. Who would have guessed that Linval Joseph has breakaway speed? I remember when I was a kid, Keith Traylor. It was either him or Ted Washington. It was Traylor for the Bears. Recovered a fumble, ran it back, and Dick Enberg, and perfect timing as Keith, and he had all kinds of time because it's Traylor running it back. So, you know, he could have actually made a few calls on this, but he said, "Look at him rumble." And I thought it was the greatest call I've ever heard. I wish Dick Enberg were there to do the Linval Joseph run back, but it really wasn't a rumble so much. Traylor at the time back then, he looked like a nose tackle running. Linval Joseph looked like a strong side linebacker running down the field with the ball.
That was like a middle distance runner right there. It was incredibly impressive how he maintained that speed throughout the entire way down the field as well. Jenny Vrentis was actually on the scene and found out after the game the oxygen mask he had on after that whole thing wasn't pumping any oxygen. It was broken, so he didn't even have the advantage of that. But yeah, that was
he probably didn't know that because he probably hasn't run far enough in a game to need the oxygen mask before. So he probably thought, this sucks. This doesn't do anything. What are these guys? Why is Von Miller always using this?
It really was legitimately impressive for whatever he is, 320, 325 these days, to run at pretty much full speed for that was 64 yards on that fumble return. So nice play by Linval Joseph. Vikings defense looks like they're sort of righting the ship here, or a little bit of is also Eagles are not quite hitting their stride as an offense with Carson Wentz back in the lineup.
Eagles are a work in progress right now offensively. I think the other side of the ball, you touched on it because that's where this game was decided. Those Viking wide receivers, those guys play every week. They play up to their ability every week. And Adam Thielen, he can prove it. He's got the record now for consecutive games at over 100 yards to start a season at 5. Has there been over the course, let's say a 3-year period here with Adam Thielen, has there ever been a guy that has improved as steadily and as drastically as Adam Thielen has at a skill position, nevertheless?
Yes. Yeah, no, I can't think of anyone. It's been an incredible rise, and he's still rising.
His agent, I remember, I think I've shared this a year ago or so, but his agent told the Vikings wanted to negotiate Thielen's contract. This is when Adam Thielen was like their number 4 guy, and his agent advised against it and said, "I know your work ethic, and I think you're going to continue to get better. I wouldn't do that." And the agent said he doesn't say that for everybody. There are some guys, he usually is an agent. He says, "Yeah, go get that money now." He said, "I think you ought to wait." And Thielen wound up signing the big deal after having a huge season. He probably did a little bit too early even then because he's gotten better over the last 2 years. So agent's Blake Barats, for what it's worth. I think he's a Minneapolis-based agent, in fact, and Adam Thielen's a Minnesota guy. But Thielen is a true number one receiver. He does. I mean, let's be honest. You know, people have these stereotypes about white wide receivers, and we think, oh, he's just a fundamentals guy. Adam Thielen is an ex-ISO dominant, fast, athletic, dynamic player who also happens to be a great fundamentals guy. He's as good as any wide receiver in the NFL.
There were a handful of throws in this game. I don't want to call them they're not go get it throws, like, put it up as a contested catch. The chemistry between Cousins and Thielen and Diggs is phenomenal, and Cousins is just kind of thrown to spots at this point. It's sort of these long arcing lobbed throws, and just he's putting it right where his receivers are going to. Thielen had his way with Jalen Mills a little bit and Ronald Darby on a couple of plays, but this uh this passing game is clicking. And it's kind of like if this defense was just playing like it was playing a year ago, we'd have a real we'd have a real headliner here in Minnesota. But you know, still working out some kinks on the other side of the ball, which we thought it would be the other way around. Let's go out to Seattle, where the Rams continue their dominance of the NFC West, but this was not easy. This was two issues in this game for the Rams. Well, a couple issues in this game for the Rams, but one of them was they lost Brandon Cooks and Cooper Kupp to concussions during the game, which left them somewhat hamstrung, but they still moved the ball all right. And when they needed to score points, they scored points and ended up coming back and winning this one 33-31 in Seattle. But Marcus Peters got picked on in this game. They beat him on at least three double moves. Two of them ended up being long touchdowns. Another one ended up being a illegal contact call. But they went after Marcus Peters, and they got him. And that's how the Seahawks jumped out to a lead in this one.
Well, what did we say when Peters came along and joined Tlaib, who I know is out of this game? But we said he's a double-edged sword, and if you're going to have Marcus Peters at corner, you need a good pass rush that gets home on time for his mm-hmm. aggressive cornerbacking style to work. And if that pass rush does not get home on time, then Peters becomes susceptible to double moves. And when you face Russell Wilson, as much as it drives me crazy with how often the ball is not thrown on time or on schedule, well, that can work for your favor against a cornerback like Peters, because now if you take it off schedule, he's not the same corner. Most corners are not, but he's even more of an extreme example there. So I know the Rams pass rush has put up good numbers this season and the pressure rates and all that stuff. They don't have edge rushers that scare people still, Gary. Yeah. They don't. They have two really good interior rushers, but Matt Longacre has not been a big factor. Ebukam is a rotational guy. They just don't have the edge benders, and I think at some point that's going to become an issue for them, and maybe we start seeing the first signs of it in some fashion here today.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of a shame that the Seahawks lost Earl Thomas. They're not going to be good on the back end, and you know, I don't know if they have enough defensively to make any sort of run at the wild card at this point. But they found a running game. I mean, that kind of is what set the tone a little bit early in this game and maybe had the pass rush back on its heels just a little bit. I mean, they ran 32 times for 190 yards in this game, and Russell Wilson didn't have a single rushing attempt, which is shocking if you have watched the Seahawks play over the last, basically since Marshawn Lynch left. So, you know, they had Chris Carson and Mike Davis rotating, and they ran the ball. They ran the ball effectively, and I think it's going to be a better offense going forward. It's just the defense is sliding back now.
And they started running the ball effectively a few weeks ago. This isn't just something that happened today. This has mm-hmm. been gradually building. We've seen their offensive line start to play with a little more chemistry. I know last week they gave a read option look in the running game on 19 different snaps. Now, Russell Wilson does not run the ball much himself, and you said he didn't run at all in this game today, but they're leveraging Wilson's threat as a runner, which is what is just as important as him running to a large degree. So what we're describing, Gary, we're talking about an identity now for Seattle's offense. We're mm-hmm. saying characteristics that comprise their approach, which we haven't had before, and I think a run-first approach has always been the best way to play with Russell Wilson because it lends itself most naturally to his unique skill set.
Yeah, and this was, like I said, this was a solid win for the Rams. This was a game they lost two starting receivers. Jared Goff got picked off a couple of times. They had to gut this one out. They had to come from behind. They were down a touchdown going into the fourth quarter, ended up getting the last two scores of the game. So nice to know the Rams can come back and win if they have to here. Not that we didn't think that would be the case, but now you've seen it. Let's go Buffalo. And I mean that in every sense of the phrase. Bills get their second win of the season, and it's just it's ridiculous. It was exactly how you'd think a Bills-Titans game would go, except maybe that the Bills came out on top. That might have been unexpected for people.
I watched a lot of this game. One thing is there was a guy in the stands in Buffalo with no shirt on and a considerably sized body, a big fat guy
mm-hmm. yes.
In the end zone angle. And he kept – did you see him?
No.
Oh, you got me all excited. I thought, oh, I know, yeah, you saw it too.
Well, now, when you said considerably sized, it sounded like you were going to, like you were coming up with a PC way of calling this stranger who's probably not listening to the show a big fat guy. And I appreciate
that. He's a big fat guy. And yeah. He's wearing no shirt, and you could see him in the end zone angle. And you know what I loved about the guy? Is he wore no shirt the whole game. It wasn't not, I don't know what the temperature was, not a sunny day. There's 62 degrees here. So, you know, it's okay. But
yeah.
He had a breast cancer awareness ribbon painted right in the middle of his stomach because it's October.
There you go.
He's getting in the spirit of it.
Yeah.
And look, hey, we're promoting the awareness and the pink ribbon, so I guess his mission worked.
He's on brand. We'll see if he does the military one in November or whatever they do.
What do we make of Buffalo, Gary? I think we agree they're still the least talented team in football,
yep.
But they've beaten probably the best team in the NFC North, or certainly one of them, in Minnesota, and they've beaten the leading team of the AFC South now. 2-3. It's an impressive 2-3. I mean, I'm going to let you talk. You're the Buffalo Bills guy.
No, I mean, look, this is their path to victory. This is how they won games last year, too, for what it's worth. Now, granted, they have a worse roster than they had a year ago because they lost a couple of they lost Eric Wood. They lost Richie Incognito. Josh Allen is a better long-term investment than Tyrod Taylor, but, he's very green at this point. But this was how they did it. They won the turnover battle 3-1. I mean, this was a game that had Buffalo had 223 yards of offense. Titans had 221. This was kind of a Buffalo win. Steven Hauschka finishing it in style. That's how the Bills win games with late field goals and games in the teens here. So, this is. Like we've said, this is a well-coached team. I think, Sean McVay is probably the best head coach in football right now, Bill Belichick as well. I think Sean McDermott is the most underappreciated, really good head coach in football right now. It's because he can milk this efficiency out of what is a bad roster. It's a team that maybe should have won a total of 10 games over last year and this year, two entire seasons, and they're already at, what, like 11?
His guys play hard. It shows up on film every week. And I know they were disappointed with their effort against Green Bay last week, and that was uncharacteristic of them. Josh Allen dropped back to pass 20 times in this game. His longest completion traveled all of 13 yards. They ran the ball 43 times. And on that final drive, they only got 144 yards out of it. So 3.3 yards a carry, nothing longer than 16. And yet they stayed committed to the run game. On that final drive, they got the ball with a tick under 5 minutes to go. And they ran the ball on 8 out of 10 plays and just marched down to kick a game-winning 46-yard field goal. So they could run the ball when they needed to as well. Imposing ground game. Chris Ivory had several huge conversions. I think LeSean McCoy is at least 90% of what he used to be. I don't think he's washing up at all. I think he's one of the league's best still. I love the approach that they take. Now, we're talking about hiding their QB, but right now they have a QB they have to hide because it's very obvious. Josh Allen, he's not ready to be out there. He's out there because they don't have an Alex Smith in front of him. Mm-hmm. So they have to play him. He's their best chance. But he does not understand yet the nuances, certainly not the nuances, even some of the big pieces of coverages, and he doesn't understand how plays are designed to beat coverages. I'm sure he's aware that they are, but he is learning how these things actually work, and he's got a ways to go. They're going to have to keep running the football every single week, which they haven't done in previous weeks. They did it in this game. They did a nice job.
Yeah, no, like you mentioned, I really appreciated the fact that they stuck with the run on that final drive, because how many teams down 2 points with less than 5 minutes to go, you know, you get a little bit urgent. And look, you should get urgent because you're trailing in a game the last 5 minutes. And I was sitting there kind of thinking like, oh, this is it. They're playing this like it's the last drive, and they're either going to get in a field goal range or they're going to come up short and they're going to give the ball back, and that's going to be it. They ran 11 plays to go 47 yards in the final 4 minutes, 43 seconds. That's a non-traditional game-winning drive.
Okay, and the 11th one was just Josh Allen centering the ball for the field goal. I mean, it's definitely a non-traditional drive. I was impressed by it. And again, they're going to have to play that way every week.
Let's go Atlanta at Pittsburgh. We were looking for a shootout in this one, and the Steelers delivered on their end of the bargain. This one was a forgettable day for the Falcons offense and continues to be a forgettable time for the Falcons defense. I guess, you know, if you're the Steelers, you're feeling pretty good about this one. They got the run game going again. They really committed to James Conner early. He ended up with the 21 rushes for 110 yards and two scores in this game. And they were clearly forcing the ball to Antonio Brown to try and smooth some of that stuff out. And it didn't quite work in the first half, but they really got it going in the second half.
How do you feel about that? Is that the right way to do that? I mean, or is that a little bit like appeasing a spoiled child?
I never like when teams do that. My theory with this, I always look at the Falcons, and I feel like, you know, Steve Sarkisian came in a year ago, and they kind of said, well, Julio Jones doesn't catch the ball in the red zone. We got to start getting the ball to Julio Jones in the red zone. They were really good in the red zone in 2016. Once they made a concerted effort to feed the one player in the red zone, that's when they got into trouble. Then they started to get away from it like they are now, and they're scoring in the red zone with tremendous frequency again. Overall, no, I think it makes no sense to it's slightly detrimental to force throws to a guy the way they were sort of forcing it to Antonio Brown today, although they hit on a couple of big plays in the second half, I should say. It started
anyone else. Yeah, anyone else, and we're going to talk about Odell Beckham here in a minute too, so it's we're in the wide receiver diva section of the show. And by the way, I guess shame on us, we didn't mention DeAndre Hopkins at all in that first segment.
Oh, we
Dallas
didn't.
And Hughes.
Oh,
he was the guy that won the game. I mean, he was unbelievable tonight. And he's not a diva. He is everything you'd want in a wide receiver. But I've seen too many times where Roethlisberger has thrown the ball to Brown when the coverage dictates you absolutely should not. And it's gone really well for the Steelers, and Brown's made the play. And I've even had a conversation with Roethlisberger about that before. And he says, yeah, you have different rules for Antonio Brown. That's to be expected. So I don't know. I think I'm fine with them force-feeding the ball to Brown because it's worked more often than it hasn't.
There was one play today, and then we'll wrap up this game, but I just want to point out this tweet, because I don't get many tweets that I like. I got a couple good ones this past weekend from the Andy Benoit fan club. But I do want to point out, there was a play at the end of the first half. Steelers had it deep, you know, goal-to-go situation. Roethlisberger rolled out on a play, couldn't find anyone. He's rolling left. Ended up lobbing it into the middle of the end zone, into the general area where Antonio Brown was not only double covered, but there was enough time for a third defender to come over, and DeMonte Casey jumped up and basically caught the lobbed pass, and it was just an absurd play. But Brian Cantor, husband, by the way, of Bette Marson, one of our favorite editors at the MMQB, sent the tweet, Ben Roethlisberger just played 500 in the red zone during an NFL game.
Ah,
that was very appropriate for our show, Andy.
Yep, absolutely. 500 is just—it's a Hail Mary. That's all it is.
It was a ridiculous play. But now I get it. Now I understand the game. I don't understand the game. I still have a lot of questions. I'm starting to believe maybe it exists, but we'll get into that another time. Let's go Giants at Carolina. I guess let's kind of use Odell Beckham and his comments as a jumping off point here. We'll even set aside the fact that these are probably not things that are worth saying publicly. I think everyone realized the Giants were having issues, especially in the offensive side of the ball. But, you know, he was kind of right. They are not making big plays, or they hadn't been making big plays for the first four games of the season. How much of it was Eli Manning? Just, I don't know if he's shell-shocked or he just seems to be especially conservative when that was never really his MO in the past. I mean, even when it was bad Eli Manning at times in the past, it was never because he was a super conservative player.
Well, yeah, I mean, Manning takes what the defense gives him a lot of the time. That's just been his approach. And I don't think he trusts his offensive line right now. And so taking what the defense gives him, he's probably doing it a little bit quicker than he normally would. And yeah, it's been a dink and dunk passing game. But Gary, let's not pretend this interview was anything short of just a look at me diva act by Odell. This was exactly why he didn't get paid right away, is because they were worried that this exact kind of thing was going to happen. And the fact that he's doing this interview with Josina Anderson, who does a nice job, and she's broken other Beckham stories before. The fact that Lil Wayne is just sitting there next to him tells you everything you need to know about the guy, at least his credit. There was nothing credible or legitimate about the presentation of that interview from Beckham's side of things. So I don't understand. I find the Giants, I'm absolutely furious about it. He just got paid tens of millions of dollars. I'm absolutely livid about it if I'm the Giants, privately. I'm not saying it publicly.
So we are going to talk about the appropriateness of the interview. I think that's – look, I think that's kind of life at this point. I think it's 2018.
What's kind of life? Lil Wayne sitting next to you?
Lil Wayne sitting next to you at an interview where you vaguely criticize your quarterback. I think that's – this is 2018. I think these are the guys you get in 2018. I think it's a different generation of young men coming into the league at this point.
A few years ago, I was supposed to meet Lil Wayne. He came to Boise, and I was supposed to meet Lil Wayne. I had backstage passes to his concert when he came to Boise. This was maybe 6 months before he became. For a while there, he was the most famous rapper in America.
Oh yeah.
So this was about 6 months before that. So he was rising. He was the Adam Thielen of rappers. You know, he was really good by then, but not everybody saw it quite yet. I go to the concert. He doesn't show up till like 11. Like, he was late, and he's supposed to be there at 10. He's gonna go on at 10. It's 11 o'clock. So I got tired and went home. I said, forget it. It's not worth it. I left before I later heard he wound up showing up around 1 in the morning to his own concert, which I guess is like kind of cool to do. I think it's just an ass move if you're hosting something that people paid for. But he wound up getting arrested backstage for an outstanding warrant he had in Georgia. And it was kind of a big story at the time. So I was really elated. Not, you know, I didn't wish that upon him, but I was glad because it validated my decision to go home early. And I felt like less of an old man.
This story is insane, and I can't really process it at the moment, but I think it's clear you have a personal grudge against Lil Wayne, and if there were any other rapper sitting next to Odell Beckham Jr. in this interview, you probably wouldn't have had the same reaction.
I don't understand why it's cool to go on stage late at your own concert, like that late.
It's a showmanship thing. Well, although if he was trying to avoid being arrested on a warrant, maybe there were other things going on that night.
Yeah, but now that I think about it, maybe he never – I'm pretty sure I heard he went on. I know he definitely got arrested that night. Maybe that was why he was late. Maybe I got the arrest order wrong, whatever it was. I wouldn't have gotten to meet him anyway, so I went home and saved myself quite a bit of time.
Man. This one's going to take a while. I'm going to have to listen to the show on Monday morning and really figure out what I think about this. But back to the non-Lil Wayne aspects of this game, the Giants, I thought the Giants were much better offensively in this game. I think it was reflected in the fact that they scored 31 points, but I think they were more aggressive throwing downfield. They had a trick play. Odell Beckham Jr. throws a touchdown to Saquon Barkley, which was very exciting. And they got Beckham going a little bit more. They got him over the top on a 33-yard touchdown. This looked a little bit more like what we thought they'd be offensively when they added Barkley to the mix and they got Beckham back in the lineup.
Yeah, it's just, I think you got to tread lightly overall still. If you can't block it up, if you don't trust your offensive line, then you have to make accommodations. Now, what we could say is, should they make more of the accommodations that the Texans are making for their offensive line and go with 6 and 7 man protections and run 2 and 3 receiver routes? Odell Beckham saying he wants to go downfield against cover 2 rather than dink and dunk against cover 2. Well, you're probably not getting cover 2 if you're getting a 6 and 7 man protection. I don't know. Maybe you will. But, you know, it raises the question, how much do you have to amend your offense to camouflage the old line? What's different is that the Texans have a young QB who probably isn't quite consistent yet at getting the ball out quickly, and the Giants have one who has mastered that, and I think it makes it more tempting to coaches to take the 8-yard gains again and again. What they definitely should not do, though, is let their diva wide receiver sit next to Lil Wayne dictate the game plan.
The headline of this game outside of Lil Wayne was Graham Gano wins it with a 63-yarder as time expires, which just seems really unfair considering the Giants lost to Jake Elliott and the Eagles on a 61-yarder week 3 last year. But the 63-yarder wins it. The Giants had been up a point at that point, so if Gano does not hit from 63, Panthers don't win it. But Panthers took advantage of a couple of miscommunications with the Giants defense. Giants looked a little bit messy on the back end. The communication wasn't good. Christian McCaffrey at one point ran wide open for a touchdown. But this was certainly the Panthers clawed back in this one and end up getting it. They also had Giants had a special teams mishap that led to a touchdown off of a punt where Beckham was returning punts today. He got hit in the heel trying to block a dude who was trying to down a ball inside the 10. Then Janoris Jenkins sort of shoveled it backwards, and then Eli Apple kicked into the end zone, and then the Panthers fell on it. That kind of day for the Giants. Panthers might have got away with one a little bit here, but let's go Miami at Cincinnati. This one was wild as well. Dolphins got Bengals drove early. Dolphins forced a turnover in the red zone, and by the time it's halftime, they get a Jakeem Grant long punt return, and it's 17-0. And it looks like Miami's going to hang on, but I mean this one came apart at the seams for them. Bengals sort of clawed back and then got two defensive touchdowns in the fourth quarter. Ryan Tannehill, I don't know, man. He kind of looks like he forgets there's people trying to tackle him when he's in the pocket sometimes.
That's awfully harsh, isn't it? That's a damning statement on his pocket presence.
I like the fact that he hangs in the pocket. He just seems to sort of hold the ball out at his side at the wrong times and sort of doesn't really have the correct sense of timing at when someone is closing in on him. That's what I've gotten from him the last 2 weeks.
No, I hear you. That first touchdown, the Michael Johnson, that's kind of a fluky touchdown, wouldn't you say?
A little bit, yeah.
I mean, it deflected and went right to him.
Yes.
The other one, I mean, I'm watching as we're talking now, I'm watching the Carlos Dunlap play with Sam Hubbard. I hear what you're saying. He's forcing the ball downfield. We got to understand in this situation, they're down by 3 with 2.5 minutes to go.
Yeah.
You're quarterbacking that a little bit differently than you would normally. And he's trying to make a play. And is he trying to do too much? Yeah, maybe, probably. But, we don't know what he's looking at downfield. We don't know what he's seeing. I don't know. Overall, I've been fine with the way Tannehill has played this season, but I think he's very much a complimentary QB, and they need to have a complete offense around him.
Yeah. No, I'm just bummed out about this one. Thought my Dolphins were going 4-1. They are not. Nice win for the Bengals, though. Bengals-Steelers is a big one next week. I mean, it's always a big one, but it's especially a big one if Steelers have sort of gotten the ship right here. I mean, this is a... it looks like these might be the two teams that are battling out in the AFC North.
Well, I know Baltimore did not win today, but I think we ought to include Baltimore in that conversation. I think that's a 4-team race right now.
Yeah. Well, let's before we get to that Baltimore Cleveland game, which will lead off the lightning round. Let's talk a little bit about Arizona gets on the board. Everyone's won now. Everyone has a win this year. That is a nice thing. Everyone should pat themselves on the back for winning one NFL game this season. Cardinals get a 75-yard touchdown. Josh Rosen and Christian Kirk start this game, and then it was kind of a slog, Andy.
It was kind of a slog. Adrian Colbert at free safety blew the play on that 75-yard touchdown. I don't know what went through his mind. Mm-hmm. First play of the game, too. But, you thought, okay, here we go, the Josh Rosen show 2 weeks in a row. Some of us even thought we might be writing a certain extra point article about it. And then Josh Rosen does – he didn't look very good. I mean, just I don't want to say he did absolutely nothing, but the offense does not have a running game, and he was not as accurate this week. And Arizona won this one on the strength of their defense, and I know it's against a kind of a shorthanded Niners team, and C.J. Beathard certainly has limitations at quarterback. But that was a nice showing by Arizona's defense. And what was encouraging, Chandler Jones was utterly dominant for one. But Hassan Reddick got to play almost every snap, which is nice to see. I mean, it's nice to have your first-round picks on the field.
I was going to say, we haven't seen him very much.
No, we haven't. It's been bizarre. It came, and it came at the expense of Deion Buchanan, another young kind of recent first-round pick. But they're sorting out their linebacker rotation there. They're sorting out what they're doing at number two cornerback opposite Patrick Peterson. They got Ben Wickery in there. Steve Wilks, the head coach, he clearly wants guys who he trusts, which every coach does, but I think in this case it's he wants guys where he knows exactly what they're going to do, which if that means a less talented guy, and I know he's going to be less talented, but I also know that he knows what we're asking him to do, I think they're willing to live with that. And we could have a philosophical discussion at some point, Gary. Tonight's not the moment for it, but is that good coaching? Or should a good coach say, you know what, that guy, that Hassan Reddick, who's 10 times more athletic than Gerald Hodges, our backup, we got to get him right. We can't just say, well, Hodges knows what he's doing, we're going to play Hodges, or B'nai Ben-Wickery knows what he's doing, we're going to play him over Jamar Taylor, who we signed to free agency. We need to coach our talent. And that's a fine line to walk and a worthy discussion to have. And maybe it solves itself over time, I guess, if Reddick keeps getting reps. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know what's going on in Arizona, to be honest. I know they won the game today, but I don't know exactly. I can't see a plan in place right now for what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the kind of thing where we'll wait till the end of the year and sort of see how these guys progress. It's been baffling. The lack of Buchanan and Reddick to this point has been confusing. Maybe there's a method to
madness.
Well, yeah,
and among other things, I just don't – if you asked me to identify Arizona's identity on offense or defense right now, I would have trouble coming up. I'd tell you what Steve Wilks' identity was with the Panthers last year, but they haven't been doing – they've done a little bit, but they haven't committed to that. So I think they want to go in a different direction. That identity, just in case anyone's wondering, was fire zone blitzes. Basically, they play cover three zone with one less guy, and that one less guy becomes an edge blitzer. And they've got a guy here that can do that in Buda Baker. They've done it some. I just don't know what the identity is, and I've heard people criticize, at least on offense, Mike McCoy. That's something he's been criticized for around the NFL before, is just kind of a cobbled together offense. What's the identity of it? They're sorting it out.
Yeah, they're. I didn't think they were that far away when this year started, but look, maybe they were more realistic in their expectations of themselves, which is, I guess, something to be said for, I don't know, being honest with yourself when you're assessing your roster. And if they don't like the roster, it's going to be a while. Ah. Lightning-ish round, Andy. You ready for it?
I'm as ready as I can be for a lightning-ish round. We already touched on the first game, so we can go quickly on that and maybe actually go lightning here.
Well, we did. Baltimore-Cleveland points at a premium in this one, only one touchdown in this game, and they missed the point after that. So it ended up being 12-9. Browns win it in overtime. They actually missed out on they went for a fourth and medium in overtime, didn't get it. And ended up getting the ball back and coming right back down. They played a lot of possessions in overtime here. So, kicking?
Browns have done a ton of overtime games this season. My goodness, they've almost played a full extra game.
They really have. And they've just had such a bizarre year. And not only because of the Browns, but it's just been a strange year. The games they played in, the twists and turns in this game. They blocked a Justin Tucker field goal. I mean, that's kind of maybe was the difference in this one, getting to overtime. You say the old butterfly effect thing. I mean, it was the end of the first half. Who knows how the second half plays out, but that was a big deal.
Yeah, I'll be real eager to see the coaches' film on this, the All-22, because of how diverse and disguise-oriented and aggressive Baltimore is with their safeties. And Baker Mayfield, at times, he's read the field like a 10-year veteran, and you go, wow, I see it. And at other times, he's looked very much like a rookie, and you think, I hope he learns from that. And this will be a telling game, or not, I mean, it's not going to be telling, it's not going to be a final indictment or anything like that on Mayfield, but it'll be interesting to see how he handled everything that Baltimore threw at him in this game.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, he had to sort of extend some plays because Terrell Suggs had his way with Desmond Harrison on one edge. And, yeah, Mayfield had to make some things happen, and he did. And they end up getting win number two. And I'm just glad they are winning games because we're eventually going to move past the point where we all sort of sort of sarcastically clap when the Browns win and recognize that this team is, I mean, this team has more talent than the Titans or the Bills did a year ago. They should be competing for the playoffs. So yeah, two wins, go win more games, go win games. Stop being a joke. Packers at Lions. Lions beat Tom Brady a couple weeks ago. Now they have beat Aaron Rodgers. This team is strange. Efficient offense again. They kind of let the Packers back into it. It got a little bit hairy at the end, but they got a little bit going on the ground. Matthew Stafford was efficient enough, and they jumped out in this game early and just sort of held on. They were 24-0 at halftime. Ended up being a 31-23 final.
We don't talk special teams very much, but we have to acknowledge the fact that Green Bay had, what, four missed field goals and a missed extra point?
Four missed field goals and a PAT. This was indoors, and these were all misses. Mason Crosby missed from 41, 42, 38, and 56, and he missed a PAT. He ended up making a 41-yard field goal with 2 seconds left, which I guess I never know what to think about the when you need the touchdown and the field goal and what do you get first and that sort of thing. But I'm kind of glad they let him kick that one so he could get on the board. But
they may have just done that to get his confidence going again.
If he missed it though, I mean. It was something else, and I have no idea. Again, it's indoors. They weren't block kicks. He has a new holder this year. I don't know if that's playing into it at all, but it had been an issue coming into this week. Something weird happened with Mason Crosby though.
Yeah, and it's I think it should be taken into account when analyzing these teams. Is yes, Detroit. They won the game, and that matters. And Gary Gramling's got him going to the NFC Championship game. I can't believe he dropped this game in the lightning round because of that. But Green Bay also left 13 points on the board, or let's call it 10, since a 56-yarder is a lot to ask of a guy. I'd like to see these teams play again.
Yes, we'll see. They'll play one more time. I'm just saying the Lions were in control of this game. They were converting touchdowns here, so. That's the name of the game, Andy. Don't just gather yards and automatically get your points. Got to score touchdowns. Denver at New York Jets. The Broncos are a mess on the road. The Broncos might be a mess overall, but the Broncos were hammered in this one. Good for the Jets getting back on track. We'd been kind of waiting to see if they'd let Sam Darnold actually open things up a little bit and take some chances downfield. They didn't this one. He had a couple of long second quarter touchdowns to Robbie Anderson. The most bizarre part of this game, though, was Isaiah Crowell. Isaiah Crowell ended up rushing 15 times for 219 yards. He had a 77-yard touchdown run. He had a 56-yard run. He had like a 34-yard run. I mean, he was like a the 15 for 219 is like a superstar receiver type of day. And this was all these were handoffs.
Yeah, and the perfect timing for me, just weeks after I declared Denver possibly a top five run defense in the NFL. This team is this should not be happening to the Broncos. I mean, any team that has Derek Wolfe, Von Miller, Domantha Peko, Todd Davis, and Brandon Marshall up front as part of their front seven. You can't be getting gouged that way.
Broncos 1-9 on the road under Vance Joseph now. Do you know what the one win was?
Give me a hint.
What's a hint? It was a Thursday night game. I'll say that.
on the road as the Chargers?
Nope. Thursday night, they won in Indianapolis. The Colts were coming off the snow game in Buffalo that they lost in overtime.
Blue versus all orange. Orange outfits versus blue outfits. I remember I watched that
one. You got it.
I usually watch Thursday night on TV, but the last year, I can't remember why, but I watched that one on film instead. And that was a good game. It had some really good designer pressure concepts, if I recall. Some gap exchanges, some stunts and twists.
The Colts also came into that game as banged up as they were going into this past Thursday night game. I guess my point is the Broncos have been really crummy on the road the last year plus now.
Yeah, they struggle at regular elevation. That's their problem.
They do. They do. They need some of those fake oxygen masks that Linval Joseph gets. All right, last one here. Chargers beat the Raiders. I'm not quite sure what to, you know, I was trying to like sum up this game in my head, before we came on. I just don't know what to say about it. The Chargers just sort of, they came out, they kicked a field goal. Raiders matched them in the second quarter. And then the Chargers just sort of steadily pulled away. It just kind of looked like, you know, a top 25 team versus like some also ran at the bottom of their division in college football. It just the better team pulled away and won this one rather handily.
Well, we don't need to go too deep in this. Again, just know this about the Raiders. They're rotating at just about every single position except to Tahir Whitehead's spot. And that tells you everything about their talent. Now, Paul Gunther, to be fair, he likes to rotate their D coordinator. Mm-hmm. He did that a little bit in Cincinnati, too. I've talked to him about that. I've asked him about it. He says, yeah, guys, you deserve to play. You want everyone involved, and you never know when someone gets hurt and you need someone else to be ready to go. So there's a philosophy behind it. But Paul Gunther's not rotating if Khalil Mack's in there. He's not rotating if he's still got Geno Atkins. They didn't rotate Dunlap a whole lot in Cincy. He doesn't have enough guys right now on defense.
All right. Thing of the week, Andy. Do you want to go first or should I?
You had better go first because I will admit I am totally ill-prepared again for
why,
this one.
Why does this catch you by surprise every week, Andy?
You know what's weird as well is this year I find myself making mental notes during the day like, I'm going to nominate that guy for my special teams player of the week tonight. Or this guy is going to be my defense guy. And I always used to forget to do that as well. And now I'm remembering it and it doesn't matter. That's why I came up with Justin Tucker last week as my thing of the week because I had thought my special teamer of the week.
You were just a year too late on all of this. I just one thing I noticed today was just weird red zone struggles for teams. Andy Dalton threw a red zone pick. Roethlisberger threw the 500 ball in the red zone. Derek Carr got picked off by Melvin Ingram throwing back over the middle after rolling left from like the 1 yard line. A lot of weird red zone play, and then all the Texans struggles down there. A lot of weird red zone play and missed opportunities. Oh, and the Jaguars. I almost neglected to mention the Jaguars get stopped on a fourth and goal from the 1 yard line, and then the next time around, Blake Bortles. I think the ball slipped out of his hand on a little pass play deep in Chiefs territory, but he basically bounced a pass off of his offensive lineman's helmet. And into the hands of, I think it was a Steven Nelson came up with it for the Chiefs. But weird turnovers and failed plays in deep red zone situations today. That's what stood out to me.
My thing of the week would be cornerback, especially slot cornerback blitzes and edge blitzes. And it feels like teams are doing that so much more defensively now. Mm-hmm. It's not just a third down tactic either. The Niners do it now. They were supposedly a cover three defense. We're seeing more and more teams do that, and I think it's a good way to defend outside zone runs. So it's a blitz, which can impact the quarterback, but it doubles as a run tactic. I know Ron Rivera feels that way in Carolina. That's probably why he let Steve Wilkes do all those edge blitzes last year. But more teams are blitzing their slot. Anymore, the slot corner is a quasi-linebacker, pass rusher type guys in a lot of schemes now.
Yeah. No, that's a good thing of the week, Andy. You came through. You can always just do your awards if you want.
That would feel lonely. I'd be the only one saying it.
I'll back you up.
So then we'd have to hear your awards as well?
Maybe I'll just back me up. I'll second all of your nominations. Well, maybe be what ends up being.
We'll have to let's talk about that before the show next week, because I don't want to go into that blind. Like I need to know if I'm going to go out on the limb that you're going to do that.
So all right,
we'll discuss that at greater length.
I've always got your back. That's going to be a wrap for this week, though. Thanks to today's sponsor, ZipRecruiter. Without them, they wouldn't let us do the show. So please support them the way they support us. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, for making us sound smart. Thank you, as always, to producer Shelby Royston, staying up late with us, as well as all the good folks at Cadence 13 who make us sound good every week. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You are the best. We'll be back on Thursday with a deep dive show previewing the big games of Week 6, and we'll have the mini mailbag in that show. So send those questions, talkback@themmqb.com, or you can tweet us, Andy_Benoit or GGrambling_SI, or we are both on Facebook if you want to send a message there. Jenny Vrentis and Connor, or join Albert Breer on, well, it's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, every Wednesday. And of course, I'll be on with Jimmy Traina and Scott Grambling on the MMQB Gambling Show every Friday. Listen and subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys on Thursday.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.